You're listening to DraftKings Network.
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vanderkoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I've wanted to talk to Gilbert Arenas for a really long time because I always found him fascinating, interesting, comfortable in his own skin in a way that was unusual. And then he very publicly had a famous moment in his life where there were guns in the locker room. And he is sort of word association with how do you throw it all away when you're a superstar player. And so he's got a new podcast, the No Chill Podcast. It's actually not that new, but new episodes are out every week, wherever it is you get your podcast. It airs Monday as a television program on the Fubo Sports Network at 8 p.m. Eastern. And I wanted to talk to Gilbert Arenas about a bunch of different things in his life. And he kept coming back to the gun stuff. I wanted to talk to him about other stuff, but he was so shaped and defined by what it is that happened to him that I've never heard him this way. So tomorrow on South Beach Sessions, we will have an hour-long conversation with him, but we wanted to play some of it for you here so that you could get a glimpse of how much introspection he did about this one thing that ends up feeling like the definition of him and that changed him forever as a player, because he says he stopped being a confident superstar player when this incident happened, when he was at the center of this incident and he saw sort of his career evaporate. And so I was asking him about the specifics of one time where he is so self-sabotaging because he knows that he cannot be for the Lakers what Kobe Bryant needs him to be, which is this Agent Zero guy, because that player is dead. And listen to Gilbert Arenas when he's talking about what he believes was the most self-sabotaging time in his career, where the wolf in him had died and had been replaced by a sheep.
I can't say my rookie year, because my rookie year, yeah, I went through pain, but that led to anger. That anger led to being disciplined. That discipline got me a spot, and when I got the spot, I took off. The ending, people think I was blackballed. I used to say I wasn't blackballed. I had to make a decision, and the decision came when I was in Memphis. See, so I went to Orlando, signed a deal with Memphis, so I wasn't blackballed. What happened in Memphis was, it was the same reason I didn't come to the Los Angeles Lakers. I tried out for the Los Angeles Lakers, did very well. I probably took about 400 shots during that tryout, missed four. And the last 20 was from damn near half court. I only missed two of those. So I was 18 from 20 from like the circle. I botched the meeting. You know, I sabotaged it. You know, you're asking me, hey, you know, when can you be ready to come? Maybe a month. Like, it's March, so I know a month. Like, you know, a month, and you know, a month. But to be honest, you really don't need a player like me. You know, you just need to tweak the second unit, make them a little faster, like you guys used to have it back in the day. And you guys are perfect, you know? And that was my answer. Like, yeah, you don't really need me 30 days, and, you know, so I can go back home. I'm not coming to L.A. You guys are going to crucify me, you know? You know, I don't want to hear that, the guy in the locker room and this and this. And that's when Kobe came out and said, you know, I want Agent Zero. And I'm like, with all due respect, Kobe wants a player that no longer exists mentally. He's looking for the guy who was mentally battling him from 2001, watching him pregame at 3 o'clock, was there every time we played at 3 o'clock. That's the guy he wants. I'm no longer that guy. I'm going to reject this.
Did I hear you correctly? Did you purposely and consciously sabotage that Laker interview?
Yes.
Because you went in there not wanting the pressure of playing with Kobe because he couldn't see what you could see, which is the guy that he wanted was dead.
That is correct.
And so why go through the process just to get there to waste your time so that you nuke the thing before it gets started? Why even go through those motions? Or you had to see if you'd change your mind in the interview or?
No. His comments came after the workout. So I'm pretty sure he heard what I did at the workout. But LA kid, when I was coming into the draft, that wasn't one of the teams that I worked out for. I think it was more of living, you know, that childhood dream of, you know, you get the little Lakers shorts and all that, even though I didn't get the Lakers shorts. But you go there, you're trying out for the team. And, you know, I think it was the idea.
You just wanted to kill the workout just to show the Lakers, look, I could still do this from half court, but I don't really want to do it anymore.
No. I just got amnesty, and the ideal of, oh, I can go anywhere I want was still there. But after the workout and you start asking me questions, and I'm like, okay, he's going to talk about the guns. I know he's going to talk about the guns. He's, you know, and I'm sitting there like, you know, you start getting nervous. Like, is he going to ask about it? He's going to ask about it. So I'm already trying to prepare myself to somehow get out of this whole
Gilbert,
whole process
that,
of interview.
That whole thing is fascinating, though, Gilbert. Seriously, like, because you are not this one act. Like, if you could go back, maybe you don't go back and do it differently, but if you could go back and you couldn't have expected the life-altering ramifications, the echoes of this that would end up you know, making you feel, I know you're not going to, you don't want to be seen as a victim, but there is something in this that even if it's brought by your own hand, even if you can dismiss the idea that it was misunderstood because someone wants to argue with you, the idea that this would somehow haunt and define you when this is absolutely, like you are really a multidimensional person. You are not this one thing.
Well, when you say victim, you got to remember there's actually only two victims. It was victimless. It's two players. Those are the two victims. Those are the two aggressors. So we're not victims, but we're victims to our stupidity. But the first thing I said before I talked about the gun thing was I should have took my injury serious, because you got to remember, it's still the business of basketball. You have a guy who signed a $111 million contract who's up to this point has 3 knee surgeries within 14 months. We don't need him anymore. We need to off the contract. The reason the story came out a certain way, and it came out that I was the aggressor, I was the one, you know, holding the, like, I never touched a gun. No one ever seen me, you know, touch the gun. Never had fingerprints on the gun. What I said and what I did is say, hey, those are my guns that was on them. I never said I put them there. Never seen I touched them. I said those were mine. I claimed them, which I could have easily said they weren't mine. You know, but I was an honest guy. Those were mine. What ends up happening is this: for a gun in a locker room, or a gun on a plane, a gun in your car under the arena, it all falls under the same umbrella: 1 to 3 game suspension. Well, as big as this story was, a 1 to 3 game suspension could not be the result. So they had to find a way to make it make sense for the exposure it got. So they didn't suspend me for guns in a locker room, because when it came down to it, do you actually have proof that I actually brung the gun? So I can easily say, I don't know what you guys are talking about. So you can't suspend me for guns. I'm only gonna take 1 to 3 games. I'm not taking anything more than that. That's, you know, that's how me and David Stern's talking. I'm not taking more than 1 to 3 games. I done read all of the gun things. You know, you got a loaded gun on a plane. You have Steven Jackson, who actually shot his gun. I'm pretty sure if you take the 3 unloaded guns on a chair, shooting in the air outside of a club, or a loaded plane on a gun, I'm pretty sure if everyone had to put themselves in a situation, it's the guy who has 4 unloaded guns, right? So 1 to 3 games is all I'm accepting. Well, then I'm going to suspend you for 50 games, and it's going to be your actions And I was like, actions, like what? The pistol firing hand gesture.
Oh, when you came back, the pistol fight, that not having learned the lessons from whatever you were supposed to learn, he's going to give you 50 games for in the warm-up line doing pistols with gun fingers.
Yeah, because you're not taking it serious. And if the media keeps going, you're going to keep going. We need this out of the spotlight. You're not mentally fit to be on an NBA court. You're suspended for detrimental to the team, and we can lift it when we feel you're fit. And I'm sitting here like, is that a real thing? So think about the wording, right? And this is why it's like, I'm not the victim. I'll say Javaris is the victim. Because you suspend me 50 games for detrimental because of this. Why does he get 50 games? He didn't do that. He just gets thrown into my detrimental to the team, and he's not doing anything.
But Gilbert, you are not this one thing, is my point. You are a fascinating personality. What I'm talking about in terms of it haunting you, you are, I can't pretend to know you, but you give off a happy, mischievous person. And so to have this thing, you know, hiding behind curtains in your home, to have this thing following you around when you're offering all the detailed perspective, because it's only been your life and you have the specific details that you've gone through a million times in your head, the whole thing just kind of sucks because you are much more than this one thing.
We all are. That's sometimes the problem with, I'll say, media and humans in general. We have this thing now, the wording is cancel culture, right? The only problem with cancel culture is the only people that seem not to move on is the people that's canceling. If a guy does something wrong and you cancel him and he changes his life, changes his behavior, does the steps to be a better human being, a better whatever, and he gets back to the top of the stairs, you can't keep using the same one thing to keep pushing them back down. That means that you're stuck still, not him. So that's the problem with cancel culture. So when someone says, hey, yeah, you know, the guns in the locker room incident, I was 28. I was 28. I was a franchise guy. I was the egotistic. I was a competitor. I'm retired. I'm 39. That is not the same person. I've done changes, ain't been in trouble since, ain't touched a gun since, well, I've never touched a gun before, but ain't, that has never been an issue since. Like, so I, one time out of my 39 years, I have 38 years of a good human being of no gun. Why are you keep focusing on the one thing? To keep saying, oh, no, we're okay. And I'm like, that's the problem. You have, what is the point of ever actually, you know, trying to improve yourself if no one actually ever accepts it?